Yes, sir. Yeah.
You know, the most distinctive sound, I'm going to be in very bad taste. Are you ready for very bad taste? I mean, it's in Thanksgiving. No, I better not. Give me some cheap guitar music, will you? I thought of a terrible, terrible gag. I'm not going to say it. Have you ever heard a Thanksgiving poem, friends? Well, you are about to hear a Thanksgiving poem. All set? I wish you all that pen and ink could write, and then some more. I hope you cannot even think of half you're thankful for. I hope your table holds a wealth of prime Thanksgiving fare, and love and peace and joy and health will all be seated there. I trust your guests will all be bright, but none of them too wise, and each will bring an appetite for mince or pumpkin pies. I hope the fowls will all be fat, the cider sweet to quaff, and when you snap a wishbone, that you'll win the larger half. I like that little corny sentiment stuff. Here's one called When Father Carves the Duck. We all look on with anxious eyes when Father carves the duck, and Mother almost always sighs when Father carves the duck. Then all of us prepare to rise and hold our bibs before our eyes and be prepared for some surprise. When Father carves the duck, he braces up, grabs a fork whenever he carves a duck, and won't be allowed a soul to talk until he's carved the duck. The fork is jabbed into the sides, across the breast the knife he slides, while every careful person hides from flying chips of duck. The platter's always sure to slip when Father carves a duck, and how it makes the dishes skip. Potatoes fly amok. The squash and cabbage leap in space. We get gravy on our face, and Father mutters Hindu grace whenever he carves the duck. We then have learned to walk around the dining room and pluck from off the windowsills and walls our share of Father's duck, while Father growls and blows and jaws and swears the knife was full of flaws and Mother laughs at him because he couldn't carve a duck. Bring it down, Herb. Hold it there. You know, I'll tell you, Thanksgiving is fantastic. You can't even explain it to anybody else. This is one of those purely, truly, total American holidays. Total. And it's even that, is getting to be totally automated. Have you seen those turkeys that are already basted? I'm not kidding you. Do you see that? Not many people probably had them. You can get turkeys that have got basting. I know how they ever do that. I suppose they, while the turkey's walking around, they inject it. Wait. I'm serious. Wait till they start growing turkeys that are already stuffed. I'm growing them. I can just see this turkey. One that says oyster stuffing. Another says chestnut. And, of course, that's kind of silly. And there we are. We're fascinating people. And when I was at the school, I went to, for a very brief time, I went to a university where they had a big farm department, agricultural department. They had all kinds of fields of peanuts and soybeans and all that jazz going. And one of the things they were working on at that time, and now you see them, of course, in the A&P, but one of the things they were working on in the farm or the agricultural genetics section, they were working on turkeys that are nothing but, everybody wants the breast of turkey, this is a whole bit. They were working on turkeys that were nothing but gigantic breasts, with these little feet on the bottom. And, serious, nothing else, no other part of the turkey was wanted. And so they eventually created these turkeys, if you see them in the stores now, they look like bowling balls. They're round, and they got little feet sticking out the side. And they're totally made out of, carving, white meat, breast, and all that stuff. When I saw that, I said, man is messing with nature. I mean, he is, if you know anything about real wild turkeys, you ever seen a wild turkey? Very few people have ever seen one. A genuine wild turkey. I mean, the reason that the turkey, is the bird that we celebrate Thanksgiving about is because the turkey was the bird that the pilgrims ran across. It was an American bird. And they had never seen a bird. This is an American bird. It's one of the few genuine American birds, and you see them now in various places in the world, but they originated here, the turkey, the bird that we know as the turkey. And I'll never forget one time of the since we're, you know, we think of turkeys now as butterball, and we think of them as frozen. And you know, the turkey is one of the world's dumbest birds. Are you aware of that? Absolutely. The turkey has got a brain about the size of the head of a pin. And a real dumb bird. And you know, turkeys, they flock them. One turkey does something. If you have a flock of turkeys, one turkey may panic for some reason or other, and all the turkeys then will just go totally ape and kill like 5,000 of them in 5 minutes just from running over the cliff. Or they're worse than hell, lemmings. Well, anybody who has ever been in the great Midwest outside of the New York area knows about turkeys. And I'll tell you two turkey stories about real turkeys, you know, the kind of turkeys that you eat. That one of the times that I one of the very few times that I, because I'm a turkey ape, I love turkey as a food. I think it's a great food. And I'm literally a turkey nut, you know. I go ape over turkey. However, one time I really got bugged with turkeys. That, you know, they grow a lot of turkeys in Indiana. Turkeys are particularly suited to that climate then. And you'll find turkeys there. You'll find them, a large number of turkeys come from Wisconsin, for example. You'll find turkeys in Michigan, large numbers of turkeys in Michigan. Now, a turkey is not grown the way you grow chickens. Most people think of a turkey as a kind of a big chicken. You know, oh no, a very different breed of cat, I'll tell you. And there's a couple of kinds of turkeys, but I remember one night, I'm in a hurry. And I don't recall where I was going, but I was in a hurry. And I'm in a car. Got it? And it was a cold, dark night. It's about this time of the year. It's Indiana. And this is a sight of turkeys you never see. And I'm driving. I say to myself, well, I'm going to make a shortcut, see, and I'm going to come over there, and I know this road, and I'm going to go down that road, and I'll cut off a half an hour, see. So I'm driving like mad. I've really got to get to this place. And to be honest with you, it involved a girl, in case you're interested. I mean, you know, this is the kind of mad boy. When you get mad over a chick, I mean, that's bad mad. You know, that's a bad one. So I'm, you know, like hurrying over to this place, and it's dark and it's cold, and I'm in my Ford, and I'm about 18 years old, and I'm really, you know, got to see this girl. I'm driving through this road when all of a sudden I see a light ahead of me. It's just right in the middle of the road. I see this light. So I start slowing up. I figure there's a car stopped there. And it's a narrow road. It's about a lane and a half. You know, these asphalt-type roads that you see in the country. And I see this light, and it's cold. It's slightly raining. It's a miserable, crummy night. And I see a light. So I slow up, and I see ahead of me a great dark mass on the road, just sort of stretching endlessly. And in the middle of this great dark mass is a man. And he's carrying a lantern. He's got a light. He's got one of these Coleman lanterns. You know these Coleman lights? Real bright things, see? And I can see the light is casting a round shadow all around. So you can see almost maybe a circle around him of light, maybe 10, 15 feet around him. And it was this insane, wild-looking, it was like out of a monster movie. This apparition. That all around him is this writhing, moiling crowd of turkeys that he is walking along the road with. You know, they heard them, and he's taking them somewhere. And you could see this white light from the Coleman lamp playing on these turkey heads. Now, a turkey is not a beautiful bird from the neck up. Kind of looks bad, you know. And he's got these red wattles hanging and the comb and all that stuff and his eyes. And the eyes, there's a certain maniacal, strange quality to turkey's eyes. And with the light, hey, hon, no, wait until later. With the light hitting the eyes of these turkeys, you could see them glowing. They you know how certain animals' eyes will glow in the dark? Well, I don't know whether you've ever looked at a turkey eye in the dark, friend. A turkey eye in the dark, I'll tell you, is enough to make you swear off anything. I mean, it was a... Well, I pull up, you see, and here's these turkeys, and they're all sort of moving like a great mob of ants or something, and they all stay together, very close, tight-knit thing, see. And they're going... That is wild. You know how turkeys go... That's the sound of a turkey. And they're calling back and forth in the darkness. Well, I stop, see. And here's the farmer. He's just walking along with his turkeys. He must have had 7 trillion of these babies, you know? Well, I decide what I'm going to do is I'm going to back up. He says, right away I thought, holy smokes, I'll never get through here, you know. I'm not going to go driving over the fields with the forge, you know, busting the axles. And all. I can't get around them. The turkeys spread out on the shoulders of the road. And, it was just like getting behind some herd of warthogs or something. And I say, I'm going to turn around. Well, I see in my rearview mirror, I see another light. Well, I start backing up, and I hear somebody hollering. I hear this voice, hey, look out, oh, oh. And I look out, I open the door, and I look back at me, and behind me is the beginning, like the avant-garde, of another herd of turkeys. Some other farmer, you know, these two guys apparently are driving them down in two great big herds, and the guy has just joined the crowd, and there I am. I am stuck. I am stuck between two herds of turkeys. Well, now, one thing about the turkey, friend, if you don't know anything about turkeys, you're going to learn something about turkeys. The turkey has a mind of his own. What there is of it, it's his own. And if he doesn't want to move, he doesn't move. And if he wants to do anything, you know, he'll do it. And so these turkeys are walking ahead of me. And they do very leisurely. They mess around. One would stop and... As soon as one would stop, that would give the idea to the last 428 turkeys that it's stopping time. See, then they'd all stop. And then the guy would come back and he'd holler at them in turkey talk. Woo, woo, woo. And then they'd start moving. Then they'd look. Then they'd start moving sideways. Then they'd move the rest back and forth. They'd go, these turkeys. And once in a while, one of the turkeys, you see, would a big tom turkey. You know, they had these fantastic tails occasionally. Now, they only open that tail... That big tail opens up like an enormous fan. You've seen pictures of them. Well, the only time they open that tail up is when they see, a lady-type turkey showing up, see? That looks kind of good to them, see? So they open up this tail, and then they start showing off. Are you aware that tail is all part of the big act?
That reminds me, this is WOR New York. Hit the button, will you please?
Tonight, instead of the usual before dinner, how about a Dubonnet before dinner?
Before, that's the time to think about some Dubonnet to drink. Before is the proper time of day to have yourself a Dubonnet. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Tonight, before you fix the usual, before you settle down with the same old thing, have a Dubonnet instead. Dubonnet's the wine that's made to go before lunch, before dinner. Just pour it over the rocks. Add a twist. Soda, if you like. That's Dubonnet before. Made to make what comes after that much better.
Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Well, let's see. We have a little Danish cheese here to talk about. And, I don't know, are you a cheese cuckoo? Talking about cheeses, sometimes you get too involved in names and not enough in cheese. But nevertheless, if you've never tried good Danish cheese, the Danish-Denmark Cheese Association here has some great cheeses I'd like to recommend. Let's see, Esram, Tebow, Danbo, Samso, Havarti, Danablu. These are all great Danish cheeses, and if you're dropping by a store in the next couple of hours or during the weekend to pick up some cheese to go along with a little wine and so forth, you ought to take a look at the Danish cheeses. They're really great. All types of Danish cheeses. And they're great Danish cheeses, in fact. In fact, in Europe, Danish cheese is really the ultimate cheese. Or did you know that? It's an interesting and true fact. By the way, speaking of facts, this is about the time of the year we're going to have to start unloosing a few shekels. Christmas time, and the WR Christmas Fund, the Children's Christmas Fund, is now in full swing. So if you can send a check or money order, it would be appreciated, to Box 710, Times Square Station, New York, 10036.
Someday you'll own. Someday you'll own. Sooner or later, you'll own
General. Oh, yes, with so many new kinds of tires coming out. Let's see what they say. So many claims being made about tires. Maybe you've been puzzled about making your right choice. Well, here's a solution. Go to your General Tire Specialist. He's trained to handle all of your tire needs. And he can also handle a little automotive service problems, too. So if you need new tires, just drop by that old General Tire store. Your driving and your budget may just make it all the way with them. Your General Tire Specialist is one reason why, sooner or later, you will own Generals. Look them up in the Yellow Pages.
Willie, when are you going to teach me how to speak?
Actually, Joe, a good speaking voice is simple to attain. Modulation is the important thing. I'm sure you know what modulation is.
Sure. It controls the gas flow.
Joe, you want to let me just sell the cars, okay?
Be my guest, Willie.
Friends, Joe D. at Chief Pontiac in Little Falls is having a huge leftover sale on new 73 Pontiacs. Now, if you visit Chief Pontiac right now, you can choose from Venturas, Le Mans, Grand Prix, station wagons, you name it, and Joe will give you a deal on it that no one in the East can beat. And he has a credit plan that gives homeowners up to 4 years to pay. So get over to Chief Pontiac during their big early bird leftover sale. It's on Route 46 in Little Falls, New Jersey.
Willie, you really gassed them. Those pearly tones do it every time.
Every time, Joe.
Hello, man. I'll tell you, I do the only show here that all the maintenance men at WOR dig. Have you noticed that? They keep wandering in and out. You know, holidays, I want you to think about this for a minute. Now, don't just pop off too quick. Just think about this for a minute. That the tribes all over the world, even the most primitive of man, knows the holiday syndrome. In other words, they have holidays, celebrations, rituals, symbolic things that go on in tribes. And this has been well documented almost to the very earliest of man. In fact, the more primitive the man, the more symbolic he often tends to be. So he leads one continual holiday. I mean, and yeah, he's celebrating one continual feast day after the other, until ultimately there's no time, to go out and fix the shoes and clean up the backyard and clean out the basement and all that stuff, because you're constantly getting ready for, some giant celebration. You're cooking up the symbolic snail that you eat on this particular holiday. And so the more naive the society, the more they have holidays. And that's quite true. Yes, it is. You'll find that a lot of things you hear on this show are true. And that one is one of them. This is a fact. Now what happens with holidays? Why is it that man constantly needs these holidays? What is it? Well, holidays are very much deeper than than the holiday itself is. So if you say that the reason we have Thanksgiving is to celebrate the landing of the first pilgrims on these shores and so forth, but I don't think most people even think in terms of that. In fact, I doubt whether many people even think of it at all. It's just a holiday. It's called Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas, and all these various holidays, 4th of July, Yom Kippur, various holidays exist separately from the thing that they're supposed to celebrate, and that they have a life of their own. And so, and as we go further away from the event that the thing celebrates, the less it's real, of course. And so, here it is, you know, this day and age, it's hard for us to celebrate Thanksgiving the way the Puritans or the Pilgrims must have celebrated it, where they were giving thanksgiving for the fact that they had survived this year. And it was a big thing. They made it. One solid year on this new continent, in spite of fantastic difficulties, they achieved this. Well, now, that was for years after that, of course, they celebrated Thanksgiving, and it became more and more symbolic and less real. Until finally, in our day and age, the idea of celebrating because you survived for a year against the howling wilderness is kind of a totally unthought of idea. In fact, I wonder how many kids who are in school today even know what Thanksgiving is about. Do they think it's about turkeys? That it's a day when we honor the turkey? Well, now, do you know, let's take Halloween. You know that Halloween is an interesting idea, that most people who celebrate Halloween, it was, in a sense, it's a religious holiday, you know. That Halloween was the day when, many, many centuries ago, when you gave the devil his due. Now, that's where that phrase came from, give the devil his due, which meant it was the day that we celebrated the devil. And so it was like a moratorium was declared for one day when all the witches and everything that were around could come out and do it, be witches, and do all this stuff with no fear of being attacked or no fear of fighting back. And so that was Halloween. Now, most people don't know what they think Halloween is about, candy. or it's about false faces or some all kinds of crazy things. So ultimately, you take Christmas now. There's a good example of a symbolic holiday. That Christmas, of course, we all know what it originally stood for. But today, Christmas seems to be about the two people, gift giving, and somehow they got the idea that Christmas has to do with children. Well, it had really nothing whatsoever to do with children, other than the fact that it supposedly celebrated the birth of this Savior child in this particular belief. But it wasn't about children. And so today people will just glibly say, well, what is Christmas about? It's about children. No, it isn't. It's not about children anymore. It's about ancient old men or old crones or teenage girls. It's not about anything. It's about a thing. It's about a concept. And so this is true of practically every holiday. It becomes very symbolic. The bigger the holiday, the more important the holiday, the more universally it's celebrated, the more the suicide. And why? Well, because a lot of reasons why. And that's much beyond the scope of this particular course at this point. You know, you want to hear what happened? Oh, you want to hear the rest of the story, huh? About the turkeys? Well, I tell you, I want to tell you this. You know, this chick is waiting for me in the next town. And ahead of me, you know, here's this mob of 4,000 angry, bugged, walking around turkeys. And they loiter. I mean, there's nothing like a turkey for loitering. You know, they just don't seem to have any purpose in life. They mess around, and one of these big turkeys, he's got the big tail all opened up like a big fan, and he spots a fantastic chick turkey on the other side, and yelling and hollering, and all the other turkeys run over there, and then they go back again, and then he lowers his fan. There I'm sitting behind, and in the rearview mirror, I see this other crowd of turkeys coming up, and a guy's yelling. He says, "Don't back up. Watch out, Mac. What do you think you're doing?" Well, I sat there, and these turkeys that were coming up behind, it must have been like the Red Sea parting. these turkeys coming up behind sort of just went all around the car. You know, they just like a great big river. And I started to edge forward, you see, following the other turkeys ahead of me. I'm not going to stay here all night. And before I knew what happened, I am in the middle of a gigantic turkey flock. And they're behind me, they're on my left side, they're on my right side, they're ahead of me, and we're moving down this country road at, I would say, roughly about, maybe 6 or 7 feet an hour. And all around me, and one turkey got caught under my differential in the back, and we had to get out and pull him out. They're going under the car. You know, they're very dumb, you see. Yeah, he thought it was the sky. He's caught under my differential. You know, they're going, I could hear him under my floorboard. Now, one thing you probably are not aware of turkeys. Turkeys en masse have a very, very, well, they're extremely gamey. That's all I got to say. And they're very, very gamey. And furthermore, they're very uninhibited. I mean, their personal habits are not the, you know, exactly the kind of personal habits. And so these turkeys are all around me. I'm driving forward, and it's like it's like a surrealistic nightmare, surrealistic dream. And the farmer ahead, he's waving the lantern. The guy behind me's got his lantern. And the entire entourage moved over the landscape like a scene out of an Ingmar Bergman movie. The turkeys. Well, the turkeys are quacking, and I'm sitting in the car quacking. And we're moving out. And it must have been like an hour and a half. We finally get to the end of this road. Well, I'm going to wait, see, which way the turkey's going. It was a T road. Now, have you ever seen, you know, the T road where the main road which we were on splits off and there's two roads go off in either direction, see? And I'm saying to myself now, I'm going to see which way these guys are going to turn with the turkeys. And when they go that way, I'm going to go the other way. Well, the guy in the front turns right. The guy in the left turns left. There I am stuck. Two flocks of turkeys. One crowd is going east. The other crowd is going west. I got my choice. It's either that or drive over a pumpkin field, which was straight ahead. Well, I drove up behind this turkey guy. I was so bugged. I'm all dressed up. It's been like an hour and a half behind these crummy turkeys. I got so bugged, I did something which even to this day, I'm sorry for doing it. I came right up behind them, and all these turkeys are walking along, you know, the funny look on their face, and their bills are going, and their eyeballs are spinning. They're going, wah, 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 wah. I drove right up behind them, and I put my hand on the horn, and I went, wah! I'll tell you, friends, have you ever hollered fire in the middle of the Saturday night feature down at the Bijou with everybody sitting there? These turkeys blew their cork. The air is full of turkeys. They flop their wings, and they're landing on the top of the Ford. They're on my hood, and they're all, you know. I see this guy running around, you know, he's got his lantern, and he's hollering. And if you've ever heard a farmer swear, friends, I'll tell you, they know languages that stevedores don't know. Because, you see, they're with the barnyard. They know a lot of stuff. So he's running around. These turkeys, it's like a gigantic rain of turkeys. They're landing on the car. Well, I sat there. I really blew it. I really blew it this time. And these turkeys were so bugged, they wouldn't move. They're sitting on the fenders. They're sitting on the running board. There's one turkey in the back seat crying, you know, and they're all up in the air. I sat there, holy God, these turkeys, what am I going to do? And the guy looks in, and he says, well, all right, wise guy. Now look what you done did. We're going to sit here all night till them damn turkeys decide they're going to start moving again, and you know what happens? Them turkeys, when they get scared, they just won't move. Dum-da-dum-bum. I was trying to turn around and my elbow hit the horn. He don't give me none of that. And this turkey is just sitting there on the hood looking into the window at me. He's looking right into the windshield, see, and the big, fat, 47-pound turkey. You can see he's lost 10 years of his age, you know. His feathers are turning white, you know, because of the horn. And we sit there. And the turkeys wouldn't move. They just sat. I don't think I ever told this story. It's a true story. The turkeys did not. They just didn't move. You know, the turkeys were so bug that they sat, and once in a while, one would look up, go, 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 go. You know, he's scared. Go, 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 go. You know, if you think Chicken Little was afraid of the sky falling, friends, you don't know what a turkey's like. I'll tell you, a turkey is not only afraid the sky is falling, he is totally convinced it's just hit him. All the time. They're scared, you know. When we sat there for about 15 minutes, and this farmer's walking around chewing mayo pouch and spitting and bugged, he's got his lantern going, and finally, one by one, the turkeys start walking off the hood, and they're looking around, you know, if it's looking a little scared, they start getting down on the road, and they start falling into company formation once again, see. Well, I don't have to tell you. We walked down that road. Me, my Ford, the scared turkeys, the farmer spitting into the ditch. We went maybe 200 or 300 yards. He comes to the farmhouse, and the turkeys all turn off left. Off they go. And I put the car in first very, very carefully, you know, to get out of there, and I moved on down the road. The car, it smelled with a smell that to the day I got rid of that car, never fully was expunged. It's a very ripe port I sold. It's got, I don't know how to say this delicately, but turkeys, when they're afraid, friends, fear acts on a turkey the way that marvelous product that tastes just like Swiss chocolate acts on a 9-year-old kid after he's eaten 2 packages of it, you know? Well, I got my electric blue sport coat on. The car is covered with a thick coating. Man, you know. And, just been a bad night, see? All the way down the lines. Well, I finally got to the next town. I'll never forget this girl's name. Her name was Patty. And she worked in a drugstore. And Patty was off her job about 7 o'clock. I'm showing up about 10, see? And I drive up in front of the drugstore. One of these drugstores that stay up until midnight. See, and her shift has been over, and she's sitting up there at the counter, waiting. And I walk in. I said, Patty, you won't believe this. And she looked at me with those 2 cold blue eyes. She says, that's probably true. I said, but, Patty, I got, well, Patty, come on out to the car and we'll talk. I got an inspiration, see. Well, we left Fifield's drugstore. We went out, and in front of Fifield's drugstore was my car. My car looked like a chicken coop with wheels. I said, Patty, now, I was going to tell you the truth, and I'm going to tell you the truth. I got trapped by 7,550 turkeys. And she looked at my car. The feathers were still falling off. And 3 turkeys have sat on my shoulder, you know, during the melee. She looked at me. She said, you are a slob. I said, I'm a slob. The turkeys. I didn't do it. She says, all right. Let's go. It's date time. Well, you know, I had to wipe off the handle of the car. She got in and she's all dressed up. You know, she had her dress on under her uniform. She sits in the front seat of the car there. I tell you, it was just a very bad scene. The turkey in the back seat, you know, he'd gotten excited, too. And what was so fantastic? Do you know that the next day I found 3 turkey eggs on the back seat of the car? I didn't know they laid eggs, you know. Somehow I had an idea turkeys came from the A&P, you know. There were big eggs back there. Well, we start to go along the street. And it was just terrible. We start to go along the street. And I'm supposed to be taking her to dinner. And we, you know, we pulled up in front of this place where they had the dinner, and I got out, and it was just terrible. Everything's going downhill. We walk in, and what do you think they had as the special that night? I don't even have to tell you. That night's special was turkey with stuffing. One of my friends, probably. You know, that had ridden along with me, you know, and picked up a hitchhiker. Well, Patty and I sat there. The car is smelling up the block. I'm sitting, and I had a, you know, immediately in the restaurant, I went into the gentleman's room, and I'm wiping it off, you know, and there's an attendant in there. See, there's an attendant sitting. You know how the attendant and the John, he's sitting there, and he's got combs and Lucky Tiger and stuff like that, see? And I've got this stuff all over my shoulder, and he comes up, and he says, how are you, sir? I said, fine. He says, can I help you, sir? And he takes out this spot remover. He says, what is that? You know, they ask you when they're taking a spot, what is it, see? And I says, well, he says, well, what is it? It looks like, so. He says, it can't be what it looks like. I said, it is. He says, chickens? I said, worse than that. He said, what do you mean, geese? I said, no, worse than that. He said, well, what is it? Guess. What is it? I said, turkey. He says, turkey? He said, never come out. Did you know, friends, it never comes out? That's right. You know, right now, today, I've got a turkey spotted sport coat in my closet. And if turkeys ever really come back as a decorative item, I'm ready. You know? And so, ever so, would you give me a little romance? Give me, that's it. There you go, see. Ever since that time, friends. Yeah. Chicken croquettes. Yeah. Turkey meatballs. That's enough of that. Ever since that time, turkeys have not seemed to see. You know, you can get too intimate. You know what they say? Familiarity breeds contempt. And it certainly does. I don't think I'm respected by a turkey anywhere in the Midwestern states these days. But, you know, speaking of turkeys, you want to hear another turkey story? That's a true story. That fantastic scene. I don't think I ever told that. Yeah, man, you can see why. Some things you just don't talk about, you know, even if they're funny. In fact, the funniest things you never mention. But one time, I'm going to tell you, I'm not a hunter. I mean, I've never gone hunting for stuff. Ever since I was a kid, you know, I've had trouble with the friends of mine who love to go hunting. I try to pretend like I'm enthused, you know, when some guy brings in this little bird that he shot, you know, $7,000 worth of shotgun, he got a little bird. Well, one time, oh, yeah, think about it for a minute, you know. I mean, you got seven stories of Abercrombie and Fitch all aimed at this one poor little bird sitting on the telephone wires, you know. But nevertheless, the one of the wildest moments I ever had with turkeys, friends. And I got euchred into it. You know, you always get these invitations around Thanksgiving saying, I'm free, 21, walking around. And I was working with a guy one time. This is right after I got out of college. And I'm working in this radio station, television station in Cincinnati. And one of the executives walked in. And he says, hey, he says, listen. He says, you really want to do something great on Thanksgiving? And I said, yeah. You know, I'd already prepared. You know, my mind already was set for Thanksgiving dinner at the H&H, you know. And he says, well, look, he says, how about taking up an invitation? I'm going to give you an invitation. He said, you really want to do something great? And I said, yeah. He said, okay. He says, tonight after work, because you're off tomorrow, Thanksgiving, he says, tonight after work, me and Fred, he says, we're going to meet you. He says, I'm going to bring my wife. And he says, we're going to go someplace. He says, you're going to have a Thanksgiving you never believe. So I said, okay. Now, remember, this is Cincinnati. So the next night, in the car, and we drive out to the airfield. We get out there, and here's this private airplane. And six of us get into this plane. They got a pilot, and they fly. We fly straight south. And I keep saying to Fred, I said, Fred, where are we going? He said, you wait. You wait. Fantastic. We fly south. We're flying about 2 hours. We land in an airfield in Tennessee. And 20 minutes later, I am wearing a canvas suit. I'm in the deep woods. And I'm hunting for wild turkeys. And I can't get out of it, you know. I mean, it's such a big thing. After such a big celebration, you know, and the whole thing, you can't say to the guy, get out. You know, you've flown 7,000 miles. And now I am sitting in a bramble patch. And we're on the edge of a swamp in the deep, dark mountain fastnesses of Tennessee. This is strictly Snuffy Smith country. And I saw, you know, a lot of these big, tall, skinny natives walking around with white lightning over their shoulders. And we got a guide who's one of those guys. You know, he kept spitting into the jug and then drinking. You know, just, oh, I'm telling you the truth. You know, oh, that adds a little bit. So we're sitting, I'm sorry, this is life. You're alive. So we're sitting in the middle of a bramble patch. I am, and I've got this shotgun. And they have told me that the turkeys go by here. You know, the turkeys walk by. They, like in a, like you're hunting deer, you see. They wander around. And he says, you stay right here. And don't move a muscle. Be very quiet. And so everybody is spotted out there in the blinds, and we're waiting, see. Now, I had never seen a wild turkey ever in my life. And we've come 8,000 miles by air. And I'm scrunched down. It's cold. My ears are falling off. And I got this bourbon. I'm sipping a little bourbon once in a while. When all of a sudden, I was there about a half an hour. Something flicks. I see a leaf move. And sure enough, a head comes out and looks around. And I could see him outlined against the sky. He takes a step, and there he is, a wild turkey. He's beautiful, fantastic. You have no idea how tall and thin, and they stand up high on their legs. They're in the wilds. They're brown and gold and yellow, and there's little flecks of iridescent green. And that big head, and they're totally different than those other dumb turkeys. Boy, is he sharp. He's looking around, see. Well, I got my shotgun, and I know these other guys are sitting around with shotguns. I ain't going to see this happen. So I reach down. I'm watching that turkey, and he goes, whoa. He's calling for a friend. And I hear one of my buddies over there with his turkey call go, and his turkey looks up, and I say, oh, no, you don't, Dad. And I reach down and I take a rock. And I said, here, buddy, get going while the going is good. And I throw that rock and he goes, up in the air he goes. And I can see him going over the horizon, safe. You've never seen anything in your life until you've seen a wild turkey in full flight. Fantastic. They make butterballs look like butterballs. This is WOR New York and RKO radio station. Stay tuned for John Wingate.
Do you like your boss?
Does he like you?
Do you want his love, his approval, or his job?
Beat on Thursday night, Friday morning. The book, How to Win Your Boss's Love, Approval, and in red, and job, by Orrin Lewis and John Tarrant. Orrin also to talk about the frustrated titan that may be your boss. And we'll talk about the corporate eunuch who's all around us. Later, fine, smooth piano player from Days of Nostalgia, Bobby Short, who used to play for Jackie Kennedy at the Carlisle Hotel. And a special tonight, a tribute to John F. Kennedy. John Wingate, Nightbeat. Friday morning headlines by John Wingate. The story, if you will, of the dentist. He's 37-year-old Fred Fisher, who had an East Harlem Medicaid practice, serving mainly blacks and Fredericans. He's said to have hit the city for more than $1 million, much of it from a double billing scheme. Young Dr. Fisher was indicted more than 2 years ago on 241 counts of grand larceny, plus one other charge. These raps carried a top penalty of 4 years in prison. What does Dr. Fisher get? 90 days in jail. 90-9-0. Published reports say that despite his indictment, Dr. Fisher was allowed to stay in the Medicaid business, has been paid more than $200,000 in city funds since the indictment. Further, he reportedly went before a total of five different judges who gave him a total of 32 trial date adjournments. 90 days in jail for young Dr. Fred Fisher. New York City welfare rules. Something new on that. About 480,000 people are eligible for welfare rolls, but do not get welfare at the moment. This comes from Jewel Sugarman, the city's human resources administrator. He says the eligibles not on relief rolls might not even know they're eligible. He adds they more likely are people who just don't want to go on welfare and won't take it. Now another figure. As of last September 1, 15% of the city's population was on welfare. 15%. However, 40% of the families on welfare do have some member working during the course of the year. This latter figure indicates to Sugarman that a good percentage of people on welfare use it not to keep from working, but to supplement income from other work. Senator Lowell Weicker of Connecticut has had it with the White House, meaning, as he puts it, the reverence in which they hold concepts of honesty and integrity, and, to quote him further, the position of the presidency of the United States. Weicker, himself a Republican, is furious over recent rumors that Mr. Nixon suggested Elliot Richardson lied about the firing of Archibald Cox. Richardson quit as Attorney General because he didn't want to fire Cox. And Richardson's right-hand man, William Ruckelshaus, also was kicked out because he wouldn't fire Cox. Weicker says, speaking of Cox, Ruckelshaus, and Richardson, quote, "These men don't tell lies. They make mistakes, I suppose, like we all can, but they don't tell lies," unquote. There's a new Harris poll just out. 43% of the people questioned now believe Richard Nixon should resign. But a majority, 47%, believes he should stay in there and stick it out. Last month, 36% wanted him to quit, so in 1 month, the Harris poll figure has risen 7 percentage points of people who think he should quit. "If you retaliate, we'll retaliate," so says the Saudi Arabian oil minister. Obviously, a reply to Dr. K., who's warned the United States might take countermeasures if the Arabs keep up their oil boycott. But Saudi Arabia now threatens to cut oil production up to 80% if the United States, Europe, or Japan does anything to counter the current boycotts. Not only that, the oil minister says he'll blow up certain oil fields if the U.S. takes any military action. He says we'll just blow them up. It's that simple. If what Dr. K had in mind was a food boycott, then it won't hurt the Arabs all that much. A Library of Congress study now reveals the Arabs can meet their comparatively small food import needs from other sources in the world market, while the United States cannot meet its large oil needs from other world market sources. In Bowie, Maryland, Mrs. Ira Savage had poured some cooking oil in the pan to get some other stuff ready while her turkey was still in the oven. Some of the oil drained through to the turkey, which promptly caught fire and went up in flames. Not only the turkey, but Mrs. Savage's entire house. Damage estimated at $20,000 by a bird that cost about $15.23. In local sports, the Rangers beat Buffalo 7-6. The Highlanders over Detroit 5-3. Boston beat Philadelphia 4-2. In basketball, the Knicks lost to Milwaukee 107-91. In Thanksgiving Day pro football, Miami beat Dallas 14-7. Washington ran over Detroit 20-0. In college games, Alabama beat LSU 21-7. Notre Dame embarrassed Air Force 48-15. Texas took it from Texas A&M 42-13. WOR Weather Watch update at 12:06 a.m. on Friday, November 2-3. Before sunrise, patchy ground fog, possibly heavy in some outlying areas, so if you're driving, Watch it. A low in the upper 40s. Today, Friday, partly sunny and mild. A high in the low 60s. Friday night, mostly cloudy. Chance of a few showers tonight. A low about 50. Saturday, some showers in the morning. A high in the low 60s. Right now in Central Park, it's 55 degrees. Humidity is 72%. Wind west at 4. Barometer is 30.21. And that barometer is steady. Good morning to Orrin Lewis and John or Jack Tarrant. Their new book, How to Win Your Boss's Love, Approval, Then Suddenly, Three Dots, and in Red Headlines, End Job. What are you about here? Do you want his approval, or are you assuming that most people want his job? I don't think they do.
Well, they want advancement, I guess, John, we might say. And from the days of Horatio Algernon, I suppose there have been thousands of books about how to get in business, how to get ahead in business. They have grown increasingly sophisticated, but they all concentrate on pretty much the same things, you know, hard work, loyalty, be selfless, be altruistic, and wait for a break. Now, they usually leave one thing out. There is one individual sitting up there above you on the ladder. That is your boss. To move, you will either have to go through him, over him, around him, or in some way remove him from the ladder.
Jack, you sound as though you're plotting a football play, a stratagem.
Yes, that's what we're doing.
We have a very nicely worked out program, John. We feel that in order to accomplish the objectives that Jack has suggested, this shouldn't be left to chance. There are tried and true methods, which we have described in our book, that I think any wage earner would be very interested in learning about because they represent to him that symbol we call success. And the boss is the man that can make him or break him. And he has to find out how to use the boss, to get the boss to work for him.
Unless he makes or breaks the boss first.
Well, that's the road to success.
What got you into the kind of books you write? Orrin Lewis and John Tarrant. Now, one of Orrin's books is The Frustrated Titan. We all know him. He's about almost every day. And you've written one with another man called The Corporate Eunuch. Have you been through the corporate rat race?